This program is a paid presentation for American Financial and Retirement Services, LLC, and is brought to you by American Financial and Retirement Services, LLC. The opinions expressed on the program by the host, host guests, and call-in listeners are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not represent the opinions of management of this station or Brazos Communications West, LLC, who bear no responsibility or liability for the program's content. The purpose of this radio program is intended to inform the public on financial planning issues and investment products for qualified individuals and investors. Many of the topics and opinions discussed may be of a personal nature, and some people may disagree with or find opinions expressed on this program objectionable. Before you invest, you should consult with financial advisors and review the program prospectus and its risks.
97 Gold presents Your Money with Fay Bagby. Sound advice to help your money grow. Now, here's Fay Bagby on 97 Gold.
Good morning.
Well, good morning, Faye. How are you?
Well, I'm so glad that I've survived Christmas.
Oh, I know. We're into the final, this is the final weekend of 2019. And so not only is this the final weekend of this year, we're going into a brand new decade. And this year is the 20-year anniversary of the whole Y2K thing. Remember that?
I remember the Y2K. Wow.
Yeah.
Hadn't even thought about that.
Yeah. Everybody was freaking out, thinking our computers were going to crash and the world was going to get off course and it would stop spinning and nobody knew what was going to happen. Everybody was on standby by their computers just to wait and see. And then midnight came and nothing.
You know, that kind of reminds me of those guys. Do you remember those guys that said the spaceship was going to take them up? Were they going to heaven or somewhere else?
Yes,
anyway,
yes.
Yeah, and they were all dressed in purple. Remember that?
Mm-hmm.
And they did not leave in a spaceship. They found them dead as a doornail. Remember that?
Oh, yes, yes. They were all in the bed.
I mean,
with
they
this.
Were going to go up in the spaceship, and the spaceship didn't move.
No.
I remember that real well.
Yeah, I remember that didn't happen.
That didn't happen. And if you look at over the years, all the different things, you know, wild things that were supposed to have happened didn't happen.
Yeah.
You know, the ocean was supposed to sink us all. Remember that?
Yeah.
At one time? They said, you know, the ocean, the waves were going to crash over the United States.
Yeah, they had, weren't there, I think there was like a bunch of like Hollywood movies for a little while where there would be this big, huge tsunami and it would hit like New York City and then it would flood away New York and then it would slowly, it would create rivers and flood the rest of the country and we were all going to drown.
I remember that.
Yeah.
Well, we've survived a lot of things, haven't we?
We sure have.
I mean, you know, and we've survived another Christmas. That's the miracle of it all.
I know. Did you have a good holiday?
I did have a good holiday.
Excellent.
And we were at Kroger, I believe it was Christmas Eve, to pick up things.
Mm.
And the line was 40 people deep.
Oh, my goodness.
Then the computers went down, and they said we can't take credit cards.
Oh, Lord.
Funniest thing I've ever said. You know, years ago, they didn't have credit cards.
I know. And when we did, remember they used to have the little carbon thing, and you'd put your credit card in the tray and then swipe that big, heavy thing over it, and then they'd take it out, and you'd have to sign it, and they'd give you a carbon copy.
I remember that. Boy, what year was that? That has to be a long time ago.
That was a long time. That was maybe the 80s or the 90s.
Yeah, I remember those little imprint cards. Yeah. We had one in our business. I'd forgot about it.
Did you really?
Yeah, and everybody had to bring their credit cards in. We'd imprint that thing. They'd sign it. We'd give them the little carbon copy. That's what they got.
Yeah, it was great for fraud because you wouldn't
run
the card.
Back then, you didn't have fraud because everything was done on the spot.
Yeah.
And we've had to replace one of our credit cards again. In 3 weeks, second time in 3 weeks.
Really? For identity theft?
Yes.
You know, I was reading an article that said that January and February are the highest 2 months for identity theft because people get their holiday bills and there's so much shopping, they pay the bill and then they throw their statement away and then thieves go through garbage and dumpsters looking for all that. They gather your information and sell it online.
Wow. And, of course, you know, another way, somehow you go to certain restaurants and they swipe that card and they send it away immediately.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you have to be really careful.
Yeah, it's a dangerous time of year, especially when the bills come in, and then that's when all the thieves they all come out in full force.
They do. Well, I want to mention this: the 3-year old Santa did bring him the tractor with a little trailer behind it.
Really?
And the 3-year old said, "I can now go down and feed the llamas. I'll put hay in it and drive it down there." Now, that kid is smart.
That is cute.
I mean, thinking immediately, he'll go get some hay and feed the llamas.
How neat.
I thought it was the neatest thing I'd ever heard.
Wow.
But anyway, this morning, he put all of his stuffed animals in the back and took them for a ride.
Aw.
And he can reverse that sucker. He can put it in park. He can put it forward. Man, he's already running that thing.
So, and how old is he? Four?
3.5.
3.5?
Yeah, so he's just 3.5.
He's practicing for his regular license already.
I think he is. This boy, I don't know what he's going to become, but he's fast. He's faster than all of us. His little mind is so much faster than the rest of us.
Wow, and it sounds like he's very creative.
He is creative. On his train, he said, you know, we need a tunnel. So he immediately starts building a tunnel over his train track.
Oh, my goodness. Wow. He may be an engineer or an architect or something.
Yeah, I think he might be an engineer. He's always engineering something.
It's not always a good thing.
And I have good things to say about Tonka trucks. You remember the old Tonka truck?
Oh, Lord, I had all kinds of them. Tonka trucks.
Yeah, and they're metal. They still make them out of metal. They're not plastic. And they'll hold up for 10 or 20 years. That's a wonderful company. I didn't even realize they still made Tonka trucks out of metal.
I didn't know that either. I figured if they even made them at all, they'd go to like plastic or something cheaper.
No,
it's nice
no.
to know.
They're the real McCoy.
Wow.
Yes. And they're little dump trucks. They have automatic little deal that goes down. It'll pick up a car, automatically comes back. The little hoist, you know.
Yeah.
It does all kinds of things, but it's the real thing. I was shocked.
Wow, that is so nice to know that somebody's still maintained the integrity that they originally started out with.
It's amazing in this modern world.
I know it.
Everything is so much different than what we expect.
There we are. And when we first started out with Tonka trucks, we always had to use our imagination, and we'd have to, you know, we'd put some dirt in the back of the truck, and then we'd go drive it someplace and dump it, and then pretend that this was going on and that was going on. And, you know, now people watch a screen, and it's all done for them. So it's nice to know that they still make Tonka trucks and people still use them.
Well, that's right. And I can remember the old yellow Tonka trucks that my children had. And like you say, you had the little winch that you did by hand to get the lift gate to come up and down. But like you said, you had to use a lot of imagination.
Yeah. Yeah, and, it was great.
It's not that way now. It's a sophisticated toys.
I know it. I know it. I did see, I think it was Walmart, I was reading around the holiday season, that they have a special place on their website. Now, I don't think it's easy to find. I think somehow you have to go searching for it. But someplace on the Walmart website, they have a place where you can go to get some of those old vintage toys from like the 80s and even maybe the
70s.
Wow. Yeah, you have to find it. I don't know how to get it, but it's there somewhere.
That's amazing. And no telling what they're worth. I'd be afraid now.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Goodness well, you know what we better do? Give out the phone number.
We should probably do that. Good idea.
Okay, it's 877-588-3330. That's 877-588-3330. And this is
Your Money with Faye Bagby.
And our website is
AmericanFinancialMidland.com,
right?
That's it, AmericanFinancialMidland.com. People can go there and find information about investing and real numbers that real people have made while investing. And that's what this is really all about, growing your money so you can retire happy, wealthy, and early. So here we are. We mentioned this is the final weekend of the year. What should people be doing right now, if anything, at the end of the year to kind of get ready for maybe a new year coming up or, retirement planning? Or what should people be doing right now, if anything?
Well, they should have already done all their year-end planning. It's too late if they haven't done it by now. Their year-end giving, they should have done all that. You know, that has to be postmarked this year. So hopefully they've done their minimum distributions, those that have to. The people that need to put extra money in their 401k or their IRA, they had to have done that this week. I mean, it's too late after then. They're giving, they have to have that done, you know, for the year. It's just too late if they haven't got all that done.
And that's really what it's all about. It's about planning and execution for retirement, right?
That's right. And in order to retire happy, wealthy, and early, you've got to have a plan. You've got to be on this plan. You've got to be working it every year. You can't just suddenly say, well, you know, this we're fixing to retire, Mama, and do we have enough money? Or are we going to have enough money? You can't do it. It doesn't work that way. You have to plan, and you have to make it work.
Do you find that people, when they come to you and they want to retire, do they have some kind of a sense of where they are already? Are they in good shape? Or do they come to you and say, Faye, I have no idea. I want to retire in X amount of time, whether it be a few months or a few years. I have no idea where to start. What do I do?
Most people say, I've got this much money. That's what I want to invest. Or I may want to put a third with you or a half. I've got the rest in a 401k. Or they may have it somewhere in something else. And it depends what their return has been, what they've made. And most people, if they're going to retire in the next year or 2 years, they're going to plan differently than someone that's got 5 years. A 5 or 10 year plan out, you know, is a lot different than someone that's going to retire, you know, rather quickly.
Is 5 or 10 years enough time, or...?
Yes, it is. If you've got 5 to 7, 10 years, you're going to be in good shape. Because if you've only got $200,000 now, you know you're going to have a lot more than that in 7 to 10 years.
Hmm. I know when I was growing up, the thing that they always told us was that we needed to start immediately. One of the things they used to say right off the bat, and this is, you know, obviously many years ago, is they would say, make sure you have a job with a good pension. And so, obviously, that doesn't exist anymore. So then the next best thing from there was always, well, make sure that you're investing. Make sure you're saving. Make sure you're putting away for retirement. And they always said to do that, you know, when you were 20 or maybe 30 at the most. And so for all of us, you know, like people I know that I went to school with, you know, they're in an all-out panic because a lot of them are in their mid to upper 40s, even, you know, approaching 50, 52. And they'll want to retire in 10, 15 years. And they're panicking because that goes against everything that we were taught when we were growing up. So it's not too late. If you're 45, 50, something like that, it is a good time to start growing.
It's a great time. And it's different than years ago. Everybody did savings bonds, or they started savings accounts for their grandchildren or their children or themselves. And, of course, the savings account anymore won't even touch it. There's no use to have a savings account. You know, if you can't get but a one-point interest, you couldn't do anything with it. It's not going to be enough to do anything but buy a cup of coffee. Yeah. Unless interest rates turn around, and I don't know how many years that's going to take. Everyone is having to do other types of investing. Savings account is not what it used to be.
So
that's not your first line of defense.
So what's the first plan now? I mean, why can we do it in I guess maybe half or a third of the time than what we thought growing up?
Well, now we've got to say what will conservatively can I get the most interest? You know, there's a lot of things you can do. Some things are conservative and some are not. So you have to think about where you're at. If you've got 10, 15 years, if you've got 4 years, you're going to have to invest accordingly. When people come to us, they want a more conservative approach, and they like life settlements. They like what it does. And then when people come to me, they say, I think I know what a life settlement does. But then some people really don't get it. Not till they come and sit down with me do they really understand how this can really benefit them toward their retirement.
And so a life settlement is where people come in and they invest in a life insurance policy. This is not like, because you hear a lot of things on TV and people are flooded with a lot of information. One of the things people are flooded with is an incorrect notion that everybody's just buying life insurance policies of anybody. You know, you see the older, the elderly people, and they're traveling the world, and they want to sell their life insurance policy, and they're happy. Those aren't the policies you're buying. That's a completely different thing.
That's a different ball game altogether. We're only buying policies of people that have stage 4 cancer, that have end-of-life disease, so to speak. So when we buy these are people that have got 24 months, 18 months, maybe 30, different amounts, but it's all stage 4, and all most of it has metastasized in other parts of their body, and that's the key to it. If it's already started moving somewhere else, they're going to have a much shorter lifespan.
Okay.
And since we talked last, we've had another maturity. It's a small one. We had one person in it. And we had just done it this year, I think 6 months ago, I believe. And it's going to pay 29%.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
And it came in 6 months?
It came in 6 months. It's a client that's been with us a long, long time. It's not a great big policy, but, you know, he invested $73,000. So, you know, that's a pretty good return.
So if it pays 29%, that tells me it's 1% a month, and then it came in 6 months, so that's 23 months. Am I right in the math here that it came in almost 2 years early?
Okay, if it was 29 months, he got 29%.
Wow.
Even though it came in 5 months, okay?
Wow. So that's almost 2 years early, right?
2 years early. So, and it was a small policy. The city made 29% in 5 months. That's not bad, let me tell you.
Yeah, that's not bad at all. Goodness gracious.
I would have loved to have had that policy.
Yeah. Wow.
So, and we didn't have as many maturities during Christmas as we usually do. Usually, a lot of people, that is when the maturities hit, is during Christmas. I don't know why.
Really?
And we've always had a lot of material, and this time we had some small ones, but we didn't have any of the great, great big ones that I had thought we might have. And of course, you know, it's still young; it could happen this next week. You know, right here at the start of the new year.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody that whatever they were going to do for 19, it's over. They've already done it. You know. So now we're going to look forward to 2020, how we can invest, how we can make them more money, do a better job. I'm always thinking to do a better job, make them more money, and that's what we're working toward.
So what makes a life settlement such an attractive investment for people?
Well, because it's a life insurance policy. They are simply investing in a life insurance policy on someone that has stage 4 cancer.
And so basically it's a matter of you invest, you set it, and forget it, and then just wait for the policy to mature.
That's right. When it matures, we send them an email and say, the policy that you were in has matured. This is how much you've got coming. And then it takes 6 to 8 weeks, you know, to get the death certificate, get the insurance company to pay off. As you know, they pay the bank. And then the bank puts it in everybody's account. That's what makes it safer than a lot of investments. We don't handle the money. We don't touch their money.
It's all tight and secure.
That's right. When we open the accounts at the bank for them, we escrow the money to pay all the premiums on that policy. So then the bank is responsible for the premiums, and we don't have anything to do with it. They do that for us. So we know there will always be money to pay your premiums.
So when people are looking at this and they're saying, geez, you know, I would really love to do a life settlement, but I'm not quite sure. How do I know that each individual policy is a good investment that will pay off? And how do that, when you see somebody for the first time, how do you explain that, why it's such a good policy?
Well, first we tell them about it. If they say, can you show me a policy today? If we have one available, I will tell them about it, or I'll show them one that we've just done. I'll show them, you know, if it's a 24-month policy, why we think it's going to come in 24, all the medical history of that person. Let's say it's breast cancer. If they've already done all the chemo, the radiation, if it's come back, if it started like 3 or 4 years ago, this is the second time around, you can bet they're not going to make it. And then we have all these people that do alternate medicine.
Mm.
All alternate medicine does is make you pass away a lot earlier. I don't care what anybody says. I've never seen it help anybody.
Yeah, so when people
It may,
go...
but our people, when they come back, and then I read new doctor's reports, it's not good. And they'll say, you know, this person, it's a too advanced cancer now for chemo or radiation. We will make you comfortable, or we'll send you to hospice, but that's about all they can do.
So a lot of people will take, they'll maybe take like 6 months. They'll go to Europe and they'll do like some kind of special spring water diet or some kind of orange juice diet or something like that, thinking that they're getting, you know, the latest, greatest miracle cure. And in reality, all that's doing is it's during that time, they're not taking chemo, they're not taking radiation. And all that does is let the cancer just progress that much more aggressively, right?
It is growing all that time while you're playing this game with the oil or the orange juice or it doesn't matter, whatever it is. And so I never recommend that. I know that chemo's bad. I know that radiation hurts, but it might extend your life a long time. And I've never found that alternate medicine will extend your life. So it's not going to happen.
So where do these policies come from? It's important for people to know that this is not a matter of going in and commandeering anybody's policy. They're diagnosed with stage 4 cancer. They need to sell their policy because it's the fastest way they can get a big chunk of money to do the chemo and the radiation that they need to, right?
That's exactly right. And this is their last line of defense, is to sell their life insurance policy. More people declare bankruptcy over cancer than any other disease in the world. There's a lot of people declare bankruptcy because they simply can't pay all the bills. You know, it's $100,000 a month at least.
Wow.
And there's just no way around it. If there was, people would be doing it. But when you've used all your other assets up, this is what people come to. They say, well, I have a large life insurance policy that I can do.
And so they need to sell it. So you come in and you bid on these policies, and you're going up against other companies. You know, it's not just you just go in and just make an offer and buy it, right? You're bidding against other companies.
We're bidding against a lot of really big companies that have a lot of money. And then we're bidding against some smaller companies that we can easily beat and do every day. So, you know, it makes a difference.
And you know, we don't talk about it very often, but it's very interesting how you take the value of the policy and then you weigh, because as I know going in, you have some, or you, I assume you must have some kind of a threshold that says, okay, if the bid goes higher than this, we're going to cut it off because it's no longer profitable. How do you, like, weigh the numbers to make things work?
Okay, first of all, we've got to afford the premium. If the premium's too high, it doesn't matter how good a policy it is, we can't afford to buy it because the numbers aren't going to work. So, you know, we're looking for something with a premium of 1% to 3%. And, of course, when it's 1% or 1.5%, it's a great deal. We're looking then to see how good the policy is. Do we think it's going to come in early? Do we think it's going to come in on time? So we're going to weigh all that. What kind of treatment they've had, if they've done the miracle drugs, or, you know, and we look to see how much they weigh, how much they've lost. If they've lost 50 pounds, they're in really bad shape.
Yeah.
So, and it depends what kind of painkillers they're on. If they're on something that's a 10, you know they're not going to make it. And we look to see how many times they've been in the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to tell you the story right there. And then the broker will tell us a lot of times they've been in and out of the hospital. You know, they're in the hospital now. And the one that we had that matured, you know, a couple of weeks back, the one policy, he was in and out of the hospital while we were trying to buy it.
Oh, my.
Yeah. And so the man was really sick. And the broker always knows how sick they are.
You know, I've heard you mention things in the past, like some peripheral factors as well. Like, you know, if they're out playing golf, you know, they're not that sick.
We know that guy's going to live a long time.
Yeah.
And if they're in now the hospital, and if they've been to the emergency room a lot of times these people are at the emergency room a lot because they're in such bad shape. They're either getting a blood transfusion, they're getting something else. So we know they're in bad enough shape that they need the money really bad, and they need to make a decision and get some cash on hand.
And so when you mention, you know, buying a good policy and weighing all these factors, and you're talking about different lifestyles that people are living while they're, quote, diagnosed with cancer, you look at all these different things. What are some things that might make an automatic bad policy, maybe something you wouldn't even consider bidding on? Just throw that away.
When it says there is no progression, there is no sign of disease, when it says that on the life expectancy, throw it away. Send it back and tell them we're not interested. If there's no sign of disease, it's in remission. And it may be in remission for 2-3 years. Sure, it'll come back, but it isn't back right now. We can't afford the time wasted. It's going to be a waste of time.
And so when I hear all this, it sounds like the whole goal is for investors to have a fairly quick turnaround. You know, when I say fairly quick, we're talking about a couple of years as opposed to like 15 or 20 years, right?
That's right. We don't want something that they say, oh, well, 7 years, you know. Well, we can't wait 7 years.
Oh, Lord, no. That's not very profitable at all.
No, I mean, because remember, these are people that have got IRAs that they want to keep rolling it over. And you can't roll it over if it's not coming due.
All right, so we know a little bit about, you know, where the policies come from. How does the process work? If someone comes in for the first time and they say, Faye, I'm interested in doing the life settlement program, how does the whole process work as an overview?
Well, they come in, we talk about it, we see how much they want to invest. Do they want to do 30 months, 36, 24? You know, how often do they need this money rolled over? How quick are they going to need it? Then we tell them how it works. You know, these life insurance policies, we bid on them. If we get the bid, we send them an email and say, would you like to invest in this policy? And if they said they would like to, we give them all the facts, the figures. It's on that old page that used to be page 14. And it's going to tell them the face amount, who it is, their age, what kind of cancer. It'll tell them what life insurance company holds the paper. And then it'll tell them, if it goes over, what it's going to cost them. But everything they need to remember is on that page, and that's why it's critical.
So investors get a chance to see literally everything about the policy. I mean, they don't obviously get the policyholder's, you know, like Social Security number, but they see, you know, the treatment they've been through. They see the type of cancer. They see if it's spread. They see, you know, what the premiums will be. Oh, that's another thing we should bring up. If it goes over, people have to pay premiums on these policies, and that is the biggest risk of the entire program, right?
That's right. You have three big risks. Your biggest risk is if the premium goes over, can you afford it? If you can't, don't do it. Because the premium could run $1,000, it could run $500. The old policies, you know, those old ones we keep talking about, there's three of those left, those are high. So we've been very careful ever since. We don't do high premiums.
Okay. All right.
So and then the second risk is going to be it's not cash during that time. If you get to needing cash, you're in the wrong deal, because everybody knows it's not liquid during the time that it's invested. And then when it matures, you can take the money out, you can roll it over, whatever you need to do. But during that time, if it's 24 months, your money's tied up for 24. So, you know, that's really important to know. Most people understand that. Then the third risk is if a life insurance company ever went under. And we've never had one in Texas go under. We've never had one not pay a claim. So we're not worried about that.
Okay.
And so that's really the smallest risk of all.
So for risk number two, you're talking about it not being liquid, and that's important for people to know, and you say people understand that, because if something happens and they need some cash, they can't get it out of this policy. But I would imagine probably for most investors, it's not an issue because they're accredited, which means that there are certain guidelines that they have to meet before they can even be a part of this. So what exactly
does it
mean to be accredited?
You must be accredited. And I have people call every day and say, either I am accredited or I'm not. If they're accredited, they make $200,000 a year, and that can include their bonus, other things. So let's say they make $160,000, but their bonus is $75,000, which more than qualifies them. Or they have to be worth $1 million, them and their wife together, without their home. You can have vacation homes, you can have ranches, you can have farms, you can have horses, cattle, everything. It's just not your residence cannot be counted. So you've got one of those two things to qualify you.
I know we talk about, you know, the whole program as an overall general process, you know, on the show. And so I know if people have any specific questions, they can come and ask you. But what would you say is probably the biggest question that people have right off the bat when they come to see you for the first time?
Well, they want to know how it works about them putting their money in. And they'll say, okay, if I put my money in today, how long will it take to be invested? Or how long will it take to double my money? Most people just want to know what kind of policies they're going to get. That's the biggest thing to everybody. How sick is this person? What kind of cancer it is? And some prefer one type of cancer over another. I've got some people that don't want to do prostate cancer. I've got some that don't want to do breast cancer. And then I've got some that really don't care. They're interested in how many months it is.
Is the type of cancer an issue? Because I know for a lot of people who have already been investing for a while, they know that if it's available, you've gone through it with a fine-tooth comb, and it's a good policy, and they just trust you, and they go on with it, and they make money. For new investors, I would imagine that might be a little bit more difficult. So do people, when they say, oh, geez, you know, I don't like prostate cancer policies, or whatever the case may be, is that just a personal preference, or what would you recommend?
Because they knew someone that lived several years that had prostate cancer. Wow. And that's true. There's two types of prostate cancer. One, you can just linger on and on and on. But if they've got the fast-moving kind, yes, we have invested in some of those. But everybody says, what do you do the most? Probably breast cancer, colon cancer, and pancreatic cancer. Hmm. Ovarian cancer, those are really the four that we do the most. And we went back, we studied it, we've got the numbers on it, it's in. We know how many have come due early, out of which kind, how many have come in late, and how many have been the most profitable. So that's the ones that we're doing.
So you continue to run numbers.
We've done a study on every one of them.
Yeah, and that's the great thing. You know, a lot of people would just say, okay, this is the way it was, you know, 10, 15 years ago when we started. We'll just take that as that it's still accurate. But you go back and you analyze the data to make sure that you're still, you know, bidding on the right policies. You're still looking at the right factors, and they're still paying off. And if they're not, I would imagine you would make some changes. Have there been any major changes in the last 10 or 15 years?
Oh, a lot, yes. It changes every year. So you've got to be on your feet to know which ones are living longer, which ones are not living longer. And, of course, you know, this year, you know, we've had Kimberly in our office. We've had people out here that have passed away due to cancer. So we've learned some hard facts, you know, about it, that it didn't look like those factors were part of it, but they are. So once you know that, you can screen it even more carefully.
Wow. And I'm sorry for your losses. I know that's a difficult thing to go through.
So. It is difficult. When somebody's been with you 4 or 5 years and they get cancer just all of a sudden, and then everything went wrong. Yeah. And so a lot of this can go wrong, and they're not at the right hospital with the right doctors, or the treatment just wasn't right.
Yeah.
And they don't make it through it. You think they're going to, and all of a sudden they have passed away, and they're 40 years old.
Wow, that's young.
It's very young. Then our clients, we've had two clients that didn't live long at all, and they passed away very quickly, which is shocking. You know, he was investing with us a long time. I talked to him in the summer. He broke the news to me. And 4 months later, he was dead.
Wow, so, that's fast.
You know, and sometimes it's fast moving, and they don't know it, and we didn't know it.
Wow. I am so sorry about those losses. That's a difficult thing to go through, I'll tell you what.
It's very difficult and shocking when you're not expecting it.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you're just not expecting this to happen.
I know, and that's how a lot of times these things work is, you know, a lot of people are, you know, they've got some something that, you know, doesn't feel right, or something that, you know, a cough that won't go away, or whatever the case may be. They think it's nothing, and then they go to the doctor, and all of a sudden they've got stage 3 or stage 4 cancer, and You know, I mean, it's a process for not only the person who's diagnosed, but their friends and their family and the people that are around them to go through that as well, to put on that brave face, to try to support them. And so, you know, the last thing that they need to worry about is, oh, my goodness, where am I going to get this money to fight this? Because on top of all the devastating news that you get, it's how expensive it is to fight it. And so thank goodness that, you know, you and other people that buy these policies are there so that they can get that chunk of change to hopefully go on and do the treatment that they need to do. This is
That's
your money.
Exactly right, because if they can't get the money, they're going to sit back and think about it. And lots of times they don't get the treatment they need, and it's going to be fast. It's already pretty fast moving, and that doesn't help at all.
Yeah, it doesn't.
They just have to make up their mind. Are they going to stay in a little small town, or, you know, go somewhere important? You know, we're looking at a new policy right now. I mentioned this on the air. This guy, it's not cancer, but he has a terminal illness. He has three different illnesses, and they are terminal. And I asked him where he was going to have the heart surgery. They just found out last week how bad that was. He's having it in Dallas.
Really?
That's what he should do. You know, you don't want to have that done in a small town, population 1,000, you know?
No, yeah, you want to go where the best of the best are.
You've got to go where the best is. So we're reading all of his information. We're going to make a decision after we look at all the doctor's reports on how long they're really giving him. He's in his 40s. He was in the oil field. And like he said, he's so ill, he's not working. And he needs the cash. So I'm anxious to find out, you know, how bad this is, and because I've got a lot of clients that want this policy if we make the numbers work.
Wow. And you said he has three different diagnoses, right?
He has three different diagnoses. So it sounds pretty grim. And they've already told him it is terminal.
Wow.
And there's no cure. So we don't know what all it is. I think it may be heart, it may be some type of a lung disease, I'm just not sure. But he's sending all the health information from all the doctors to us where we can have our doctors read all this and we'll see how bad it really is.
What kind of a range of money-wise would the policy fall into? Is it a big policy?
It's a $400,000 policy.
Well, that's pretty good size.
I think it's a good size. I think our clients we'll really want to invest in it if we can make it work.
Hmm. All right. This is Your Money with Faye Bagby. Your phone number is?
It's 877-588-3330. That's 877-588-3330. And we're at 3105 Big Spring, right next to Ivy Cottage. It may be sold out by now.
Well, yeah. I mean, especially if you've been over there during the holiday season. I know how you are.
You know how I am, don't you?
Yeah. And
your website. I cannot pass up anything that's pretty.
Oh, I know it. And you always talk about how wonderful their selection is at the holiday time and their Christmas decor. I bet you have at least one of almost everything in that store.
I bet I do, too. I cannot deny it.
No, you cannot. We'll go to your house and we'll see it all over the place.
That's exactly right.
And every Saturday morning around this time, we get into trivia, and we always talk about interesting things. So what is our topic this morning?
You'll be so shocked. It's one of my favorite subjects. Where did macaroni and cheese come from?
Well, that's not what I was going to guess, but that's a good topic. I think everybody loves mac and cheese. I'm going to say someplace in Texas.
No, it did not.
Really?
But I'm doing it anyway.
All right. You fooled me. That's how you got me.
12th and 13th century, by the way.
Oh, my goodness. I had no idea it went that far back.
And there was a book. It came out as an ingredient in a book called The Experienced English Housekeeper.
Really?
This was published in 1769.
Whoa.
1769. You and I would never believe this. If we'd been on a quiz show, we'd have lost on this.
Oh, yeah, big time.
Now, let me tell you how the recipe goes. It's pretty funny. Boil 4 ounces of macaroni till it's quite tender. Lay it on a sieve. Now, I don't know what a sieve is to drain.
All right.
Then put it in a toffing pan with about a gill of good cream. Roll it in flour, boil it 5 minutes, pour it on a plate, lay all over Parmesan cheese, C-H-E-E-F-E, toasted, T-O-A-F-T-E-D, send it to the table on a water plate for foam goes cold. For foam goes cold.
I don't even know what half that means.
Now, this is in the 1700s.
Wow.
We don't know for sure how they were doing this.
No.
Okay.
It clearly is much different than the stuff in the box.
Oh, yeah, this is long before that. And they said the use of cheddar cheese was first used in a cookbook long, long time ago. It was seen many times in 19th century cookbooks.
Really?
Yes, and they were making their cheese, but it all came from England. Do you realize this?
I did not know that.
Yes. Cheddar cheese and England go hand in hand.
Huh.
Cheddar cheese was added, and they called it cheddaring.
Really?
It was a process that gave cheese its name. There is a village in England called Cheddar.
Really?
Yes, and specifically where the name came from. There are caves at Cheddar Gorge. This is near the village of Cheddar. It has the perfect humidity and temperature for making cheddar cheese.
Now, I have always heard that humidity and temperature are critical to making good quality cheese.
And they said it's so popular in the UK. It's been made since the 12th century there. And it's the most consumed cheddar cheese in the UK.
Really?
And then it migrated to France and Italy. And it was mentioned as an ingredient in an English cookbook, and it was very popular. It makes sense, it says, that the two were combined in England, but I just don't know exactly how they did it because their cookbooks were so different.
Yeah.
And, of course, you know, the U.S. has such historical ties to England. It migrated along with much of our culture from the U.K.,
huh.
And then leaped to America. But it was Thomas Jefferson. And this has always stood, and I don't believe it, but it says it. It may have been made in the homes of Americans, but Thomas Jefferson served macaroni and cheese at a state dinner in 1802.
Really? And I bet they thought it was fancy at the time.
Oh, heck yeah. And he wrote up plans. He was going to make a macaroni machine, and it was called a pasta extruder. And he'd spent a lot of time seeing Europe. And he was going to make a macaroni pasta extruder, he said.
All right.
And he was influenced by all this, and he was overseas a lot. He was very adventurous. And so he decided he was going to learn how to do that. And then in the 19th century, it became the cheese of choice. So it took off in a big way. 1937, now this is going to be hard for you to believe, is when Kraft started selling the boxed version. I thought it was in the 50s or 60s.
Yeah, see, 37 seems a little bit earlier than what I would have ever guessed.
And it was a big hit in 37. And it would serve four people at a reasonable price. The average American was feeling the impact of the Great Depression.
Mm.
And so they started boxing it. I do not know what they sold it for. But you could serve four people, it said, for just a very reasonable price.
Yeah, I'm sure it was probably pennies at the time.
Yeah. And so after World War II, it became recognizable as the Kraft box, then a home-cooked meal.
Huh.
So it was sent... It was sealed then in the annals of history once they boxed it.
Yeah, yeah.
But can you imagine 12th, 13th century, started in England, they perfected it there, and Thomas Jefferson was going to the UK all the time, and he decided to serve it in state dinners in the 1700s.
You know, it sounds like macaroni and cheese started as like a decadent dish, and now it's more like a side dish for, the main course or whatever you're serving, you know, barbecue or at, picnics or whatever. It sounds like mac and cheese has really kind of transformed over the last several centuries into a side dish.
It has, and I've been to some really fine restaurants. And when you're going down there to see what vegetables you want, they'll have mac and cheese on the recipe.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a baked macaroni and cheese. And I'm shocked, because you wouldn't think it's this fine of a dish that in a really nice restaurant you'd see mac and cheese.
Yeah. Oh, gosh, they make fancy macaroni and cheese now, and they've got, have you heard mac and cheese with, like, Gruyere cheese and, like, seafood, like maybe some crab or some shrimp in there?
Mm. Oh, yeah, and they also put wine in it now.
Ooh.
So, it can be very outstanding.
Wow. I didn't realize they were putting wine in mac and cheese.
Oh, yeah, you can have it with wine.
Wow.
So the lowly macaroni and cheese has come a long way.
Yeah, it has. It's nice to know that it's something that kids like growing up. You whip up a box of it real quick, or you can go to a fancy restaurant and it can really be part of a decadent, elegant dinner. It's really neat, the whole spectrum of one dish and how many different forms it can take.
Yeah, and to think, 12th, 13th century, they were talking about in a cookbooks way, way back. I don't understand how they were making it because of the wording in the old English cookbooks, but they were putting it together. They were making their own cheese back in Cheddar, England.
Yeah.
And that's where the cheddar really came from.
Wow. That's probably what put cheddar on the map then, I would guess.
I think so. And so then later, they had all kinds of different cheeses, like you say, to make mac and cheese with.
Yeah.
Fancy cheeses. The old-fashioned cheeses, but it's one of those things that never gave out.
Yeah, love lobster mac and cheese. Do you like lobster mac and cheese?
I don't believe I've ever served it with lobster.
Ooh, it's delicious. You put cut up some little lobster and put that in there. Mm-mm-mm.
Oh, my gosh, I'll have to try that.
I think Mama's calling me right now.
You feel the call, right? Oh, my gosh. Woo!
Ooh,
I love that.
Wow. The legend of macaroni and cheese. Interesting.
That's right.
We'll never look at it the same again. This is Your Money with Faye Bagby. Your phone number is?
It's 877-588-3330. That's 877-588-3330.
And your website, AmericanFinancialMidland.com. People can go there and find out all kinds of information, real numbers, real money that real people have been making. So here we are in the final weekend of 2019. What does things look like for 2020? As you look out, and I know we never really know for sure, but as far as general overall investing, what does the landscape look like? What are experts saying? What's the buzz?
Well, I think we're going to have a wonderful year. I think it's going to be a dynamic year. We've got contracts with other companies this year that I think will give us more policies. We never have too many policies. We have a lot every year. This is going to bring us even more policies in. Hopefully we'll have more maturities this year, and people will make a good sum of money, and that's what we're interested in, getting everybody ready for retirement. That's all this is about. It's your money with us, and we're just trying to direct people where they can retire safe, happy, and hopefully with a lot of money.
And, when you say, planning for retirement, getting ready for retirement, and this is all part of that, it's important for people to know that this is not just a one-time thing. People don't just come in, invest in one policy, and then, boom, they go ahead and retire next week. That's not how this works. It's part of a process. It's part of a strategy that you put together over several years to grow people's wealth. How many policies on average would a typical investor be in at one time?
I've got people that are in as high as 12 policies. I've got people that are in like 5, 6.
Okay.
Everybody has a medium range of policies, and it takes that many because you've got to have policies coming due all the time. I don't know how many policies per person has come due this year. We've got a lot that have had four or five come due, especially the last 3 months. I've had a lot of policies come due. Our friend Rick is out in California. Rick's had a lot come due this year. I don't know how many, but I think four or five.
Oh.
He's had a really good year. Charlotte's had a really good year, my friend. I just can't name all of our customers. You know, we've got 500-something.
Good Lord.
So if I named them all, it'd take me a while to sit here and name every person. But we've had lots and lots of maturities this year. We've got over $100 million invested of people's money. We've had a lot of people's policies come in early, and that's where the website comes in. If they'll go to the website, look up what all's come due, how many policies have matured, how many they've had mature if they forgot, or get a statement for the end of the year. A lot of people should get a statement at the end of the year, look at it and see how good a job we've done this year, how many policies they've had mature, what they've made. And a lot of people are going to need to get a statement because if they have a regular policy and it's not IRAs, they have to pay taxes on that money in April, okay?
Okay. This is kind of a two-part question. How many years should somebody plan on being investing to get ready for retirement? And then the other side, how many years do people actually still invest?
I would say 10 years.
Really?
Well, yeah, because if it's working, why change?
Exactly.
So, and a lot of people, once they retire, they're taking money out every year to live on. Some are not going to take money out for 4 or 5 years. Some have started on the second or third year taking money out.
Mm-hmm.
And then we've got people that have got annuities, and they're taking money out every year because they've been in the annuity a while. And so now they're going to start taking their interest out.
Okay. You know, we talk about, you know, investing for several years to build up to retirement. But I would imagine that this is probably the type of investment that is so, and I need to be careful here with how I phrase this. So if I get this wrong, correct me. But this is the type of investment I would think is so conservative, people can continue to invest after retirement, keep growing their money, and they're still on a conservative path and still growing their money. Is that accurate?
That's exactly right, because if you're making money before you retire, if you've got that interest coming in, why not keep it and keep making interest? Because you're going to need interest the rest of your life.
Yeah, yeah. Are people actually prepared for retirement when they come see you? Do they think about things like, because we always talk about, okay, you've got to have $1 million to retire on and then keep growing that and all that, but we don't always address things like, you know, the emergencies or the accidents that may come up after retirement, and those can take a lot of money in a big hurry to treat things like that. Are people ready for those types of things?
A lot of people are, and some aren't. You know, it depends on their situation, on the individual customer.
Okay. All right. So we talked about, you know, the life settlement program. We talked about being accredited in order to do that. If somebody is not accredited, it does not mean that all hope is lost. You still have other options for them to grow their money, right?
That's exactly right. They can do annuities. Annuities have been around a long, long time, over 100 years. As long as it's an A-rated company, if they want more risk, we could do a B-rated company. We've never done a B-rated company. We always stick to A-rated companies because they've got billions and billions. And if you're with a company that's got $57 billion, I think you're very safe. I think it's a safe bet. They've been in business 100 years. They're not going anywhere. They'll make good on their interest. And that's why you do an annuity, for the interest payments that you can get for the rest of your life. That will give you a good retirement strategy if you're not accredited. And a lot of people are not accredited.
Okay. So they would use that to build up their wealth, I guess, get to the point where they are accredited, and then if they want to switch over to the life settlement, they could. Is that feasible?
That's exactly right. They can do that as they become wealthier.
Okay, cool. So I know we're getting into the holidays, or we're well into the holiday season. So what is the schedule like? Are you available for appointments, or are people booking a couple weeks out?
Well, usually they're booking a couple of weeks out. It depends if they have all their papers together, if they're ready, if they're prepared. And they may want to call me on the phone and talk to me before they make the appointment. I have lots of people that do that. They'll say, can I talk to Faye? Can I ask some questions before I come? And certainly they can. That's part of it.
Okay. And so one last time, Faye, for people to call you, what is your phone number?
It's 877-588-3330. That's 877-588-3330.
Happy New Year, Faye.
Happy New Year. Thanks.
You've been listening to Your Money with Faye Bagby. Sound advice to help your money grow. Listen for Your Money with Faye Bagby every Saturday morning at 10 here on 97 Gold.
This program has been a paid presentation for American Financial and Retirement Services, LLC, and has been brought to you by American Financial and Retirement Services, LLC. The opinions expressed on the program by the host, host guest, and call-in listeners are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not represent the opinions of management of this station or Brazos Communications West, LLC, who bear no responsibility or liability for the program's content. The purpose of this radio program is intended to inform the public on financial planning issues and investment products for qualified individuals and investors. Many of the topics and opinions discussed may be of a personal nature, and some people may disagree with or find opinions expressed on this program objectionable. Before you invest, you should consult with financial advisors and review the program prospectus and its risks.